Scott?
Not much. How's it going?
Ditto.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a day drinker, so I'm pretty much coffee till whenever, but I made an Irish coffee.
So. Good. You're in. You're okay. That'll work, man. You can drink coffee, tea, whatever, you know. Spike it.
Yeah, spike it up a little bit.
Just spike. I'm glad. Well, cool, man. Well, hey, you know, thank you for taking the time. I know that we it's something that we all have a lot of these days, but it's really great to have you on and really appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Oh yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I like getting to do stuff that that I want to do.
As opposed to shit you just have to do.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I guess, life in general, but especially lately, like I feel like, you know, because we can't do anything, there is no music business. There is no one's doing anything. So I think in lieu of that, of course, people are finding more and more ways to fill the blank spaces. And so there's seemingly suddenly 1,000 more things to do, kind of press-wise.
1,000 more podcasts as well. Because
So when I say meeting, like doing things I want to do, I'd like to sit and talk to you for hours. Whereas I get these ones that come in, and it's just like, and previous guests they've had on are, and I'm like, I don't know what any of this even is or means, and I have nothing to talk about right now. I'm not doing anything. So it's like... I'm creating things to do.
Yeah, I know. It's like, what the hell am I going to talk about? You know, it's right. Like, well, what have you been doing? Same thing as everybody else. Freaking nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you picked up any hobbies or learned new, like learned how to fix the toilet or things like that?
You know, I'm trying to think what I've done constructively over the last 10 months. You know, I'd like to say I'm shredding like Eddie Van Halen now, and I can run a mile in 4.5 minutes. And
at the same time,
nothing cool like that though. yeah. I've done a lot of cooking.
Okay,
I mean, which I suppose, like most people, especially where we live, probably similar to Cody, it's not as easy to just get takeout or have someone delivered to you. And so a lot of cooking, which I feel like that's been something I've definitely improved at. First few months I did a lot of drinking, so I got better at that again for a while.
yeah, haven't we all? Golly, it's been, you know, every day's Groundhog Day or Blur's Day or last Blur's Day or, you know, you're talking about, I did this a couple of weeks ago and it was actually 5 months ago. You know, it's so stinking weird, but
I read someone had a quote about it because I read the paper every morning. I get up and make coffee. I read the newspaper, and this one article I was writing about time and about why does time feel so weird, you know, through this quarantine and the pandemic and all that. And the guy called it the metronomic sameness of our day to day. And I thought that was just such a great way to put it, because it really is. It's, my life is on a metronome. Like I find myself throughout the day going, oh, I'm doing this again in the same exact time. Like, oh, now I'm doing this. And I did this yesterday and I did this last Tuesday. And I did like, it is.
Absolutely.
It's like you really start to develop patterns and habits, and because you're just home, and especially for guys like us who, you know, have lived a lot of our lives traveling, and now you're home, and I've really kind of almost like I've taken my road habits and I moved them into, because I've never been home this long ever.
I've never been home
for a year.
Yeah.
Not since before I started touring. So like literally since 83. I have never been home for this amount of time in one stretch.
Yeah, it's nuts. We're in the same, you know, we're all in that same boat. It's, oh my gosh, it's so weird, man. And that's the thing. I, you know, obviously our children are about the same age, you know, and having been here for, because we got off the road at the end of February last year, and then everything happened. And so the kids have gotten to know me a whole lot better in a lot of ways. And, you know, it may be not a lot of ways too. I don't know, but
right.
Like you were talking about a routine, you know, like I'm not so much one that I don't like schedules.
Yeah.
But I do have my daily habits, you know, and it's easier for me to have those daily habits when I'm actually out on the road. I feel like I can actually control that more than when I'm at home. So I've had to develop new routines, new habits, not so much a schedule, but you know, everything, you know, being Groundhog's Day, it's been strange. But man, I tell you what, let's go ahead. Let's start with to the let's see. You're in the middle. Y'all are always in different places, different days. I don't know how
it's
works.
It's how we log in. It's just the way we log in.
Okay. To the bottom right, I've got out of Boyd, Texas, we have Josh Thompson. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. And how are you, Scott?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, well, well.
To the center left, you down by Waco today? Well, all right, we got Bobby Keith, yes, Kilgore. Okay. Good buddy, good how buddy. And top left today, turning the knobs from Nashville, Tennessee, we have Seth Noseworthy, which you cannot hear him, but he can hear us. So, hey to you, Seth.
It's amazing how still he stays on that, in that shot.
He doesn't ever so move. Stoic. He'll be like that. So for like an hour, he'll be like that, you know. And I don't. We're doing season 2, episode 5 right now, and we've got a hero on today. I got one of my heroes on. I'll just go ahead and say it. You know, I'll just go ahead and nerd out and stuff like that. A guy that literally was formative in how I play guitar and my approach to playing live. And man, couldn't be more honored to have you on today. We've got Scott Ian from Anthrax on today. Welcome, buddy.
Oh, thank you, man. Hey. Thanks, Cody. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. I look forward to these. We have such a good time with it because it's just a BS session, man. We're not solving the world's problems here. We're talking music and life and being bored and all that kind of stuff. But I want to open this up with a cool story, and then I'll throw it to you and let you talk. But when I was 16 years old, you had a series from Jackson that came out that was the JJ series. And my son is now playing guitar. And I think that your son Rebel has had a lot to do with that, you know, cool. being inspired to play drums and guitar and all that. And whenever that series came out, it was mid-90s, somewhere around there. I used to go to, because Anthrax is one of my favorite bands of all time. I used to go to Guitar Center and look at the JJ one with the flames and the dice. Yeah.
Sure.
And yep. I never got one. I could never afford that guitar. And the other day, Larson was going to guitar lessons and he saw a Gibson Explorer. And he said, it's one like James plays. And I said, yeah. He said, Dad, it's $1,000. I really want to save my money to be able to get it. And right. My initial thought was, don't go buy it because he needs to go through what I went through, right. not being able to have that JJ one. You know,
yeah.
You got to have that hunger. You get better from the hunger, I believe. And so the other day I was telling him that story and I said, buddy, that's a lot of money. I said, let me tell you a story about a Scott Ian signature series that I wanted. And I was never able to have one. He said, well, do you think that you could have one now? I looked him up online. You know what those things are going for right now, dude?
No.
About $2,500.
Oh, really? Those old little flame JJs?
Yep.
Nice. Wow. Well, I mean, I wonder what they were. I mean, what were they new? I don't know. No idea.
11, 12, somewhere around there.
Okay. Right, yeah. Right.
You know, cool. It was right around the the 1K mark. But,
right.
But yeah, man. He said, well, do you think you could have one now? And I got online. I was like, well, I just might now. But it
shit,
is.
I should buy him a 2500 and then play it for a song, sign it like the Kiss method. And yes. Then sell them for $15,000.
That's what you do. Absolutely, man. That's what Ward Davis does, man. He buys Ward buys those pawn shop guitars and then plays it, signs it, and like, yeah, it's very lucrative.
It is. I learned from the best to hear about what Paul and Gene do, and I just do it on a much smaller level.
Yeah. Well, anything compared to them is small. Kiss has been going on in our house. Larson's been working on Detroit Rock City on the drums.
Oh, so nice.
I learned it on guitar.
Right.
And so we've been jamming Kiss here.
Cool.
In the Jeeks household.
To go back to what you were saying, I agree. I think there's definitely something to be said for, the learning the value of the dollar, and once, let's say he did save $1,000 to buy that guitar, and then he has that guitar in his hands, I feel like the guitar would mean more to him. Mm-hmm. Knowing like I bought this, I earned this, and I mean, it was the same as a kid. I my parents didn't have money laying around for stuff like that, so anytime I wanted something, it was a case of I had to work for it. I had to figure out a way to make it happen. So any gear I ever got, I'm talking from like the ages of like, say, 15, 16 up, it was all stuff that I bought because I was working, whatever jobs I could find just so I could buy gear. With Revel, he does live in a house filled with guitars. So that kind of, makes things easier as far as, his guitar playing goes, but for drums, there's a lot of stuff he wants on drums, and it's either he's got to figure out a way to work to get that stuff, or he waits for his birthday and Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And that's it. It's the value of a dollar. And, like you said, my kids grew up in a house full of guitars but it's the working for it. It's the knowing that, that you earn that, and it means so much more. But let's touch on how multifaceted your career is. Besides Anthrax, Stormtroopers of Death, the Damn Things, which I learned about the Damn Things from Sal, which is one of our engineers on the road. He's a big fan of the Damn Things. Mr. Bungle, Motor Sister. Not only that, and I have a copy of it right here. I'm the Man right there. And then that's not the only book that you've written. I'm the Man, Access All Areas. And I haven't read, Lobo Highway to Hell. I'm not familiar with that one, but you are the writer for all of Anthrax's lyrics as well. You're also an actor.
Stretch.
You've been on more shows than I have, man. So I mean, like, if you've been on Deadwood, you're an actor. But
right,
you are, and you're an avid reader. I know. Just talking with you about that. You're a big Stephen King fan.
Yeah.
Do you have to stay busy? Don't you?
I don't. I'm not one of those guys. Let's say I'm half one of those guys. Like I have friends who other guys in bands who they have to be like, they just have to be constantly working. I really don't have a problem turning it off. If anything, right now I feel like I'm having a problem turning that back on, because I've enjoyed being off so much since February. I've enjoyed it so much that the idea of working again now is a little bit scary to me. because we officially decided we're going to start working on this Anthrax record again. We had started working on it in the fall of 19. We started writing, and even earlier than that. But in 19, we started writing. So by the time quarantine rolled around, we had like 7 or 8 arrangements together, pretty tight arrangements musically of new songs. No vocals yet, no lyrics. And then this all hit, and everyone just kind of stepped back because we know we're not going to get together and jam and whatnot. So, but around the holidays that just passed, I talked to Charlie and I said, what do you think about maybe after the new year, we start jumping back in and revisit everything we had. And I know there's a lot of new ideas already, you know, between Charlie and myself and Frankie. So we should maybe start moving. And our goal for 21 would be to at least finish a record. I don't know when we'd put it out, but at least get it done. And so we all agreed, yeah, let's do that. Cool. Let's get back to work. And then, of course, now I'm like, now I got to go back to work.
Yeah.
But well, don't get me wrong, I'm excited about it. And once I really start thinking about it and start replaying those demos of the new stuff and actually start, because I've got a book full of lyrics that I need to start putting together with the music. And once this starts happening, I'll be real excited about it. But it's weird. Like right now, I feel like I'm still enjoying my vacation in a weird way.
Well, I think that's really interesting. You know, the trepidation of, you know, wanting to go back to work. And I have kind of felt that same thing as well. You know, the ability to spend the time, like you said, not having this time ever with the kids like you have this last year.
Yeah.
It's been such a blessing in a ton of ways. And I completely understand that, you know, this is really cool. And they're at cool ages too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's been amazing to be home all this time and also know that we're not going anywhere for at least another year. There's no touring is going to happen. No. So, you know, not in any real way. So, you know I've got that all in front of me, which, you know, I think is how I've kind of balanced it in that I know, look, eventually my life's going to go back to that normalcy of I'm going to be in a band that goes out and plays shows again. At least I hope so. And otherwise, I'm going to have to find a real actual job to replace that, doing something else. But I know that's going to happen at some point. So I just look at it as, all right, I get the bonus of I still probably have another year where even if it means I'm home writing, it's still for me. And my life situation, it's still great because I still just get to be home with my wife and son. And I know, look, if I could trade that for no pandemic, I would. I'm not selfish in that way. Like if I could trade my personal happiness to get rid of this, I would do that, of course. But that's not realistic. So I'm just trying to enjoy, you know, make the best of the worst situation that's certainly ever been a part of any of our lives, you know, on this planet.
Well, and that's man, you nailed it right there. You know, Scott, I've been telling my wife the same thing. You know, I wouldn't wish this to ever be what's going on. And like right. I said, my own personal happiness, but the time off has been more good for me than it has bad.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's good to come up for a breather. And like you just said, you know, you've got to, you know, probably just have lyrics and lyrics and lyrics just laying around. And I'm doing the same thing, you know, and we're trying to figure out a time when we can get back into the studio because, I mean, we've been sitting here for a year. And I agree with you. I don't think we're going back to work this year. I don't see that happening. I don't think that we're going to be on a bus until next year.
No, there's no way. And just even think how weird that's going to be coming out of this. It was already disgusting being on a tour bus with a bunch of other dudes.
Yeah.
And now on the back of this, I already was like, I'm kind of a neat clean, not, I won't say I'm like super anal about being like a clean freak, but all the years I've spent on the road, that's one of the things that's helped me deal with that is just keeping my space organized, whether it's on the bus or hotel rooms or backstage. I can't stand clutter and mess around me. It just makes it hard for me to think. And so, you know, just the idea of getting back on a bus, and a lot of the guys in my band are very like-minded when it comes to that. So, I mean, our bus is going to be like an operating room. It's going to be so clean.
Yeah.
To go back to what also you said earlier, I mean, yeah, I am a busy guy, especially when there isn't a pandemic. And I mean, you reeled off the names of all those bands but you know, the thing is, I've done a lot of that stuff has been when there was a window, really, like the Damn Things came out of a time when Anthrax was kind of, you know, actually on a hiatus when we first got together and started writing Damn Things songs back in like 07 or 08. It was at a time where Anthrax wasn't, we were a band, but it was at that point in time, it was just Charlie and I. Like, we had done this reunion with Joey in 05 and 06, and the fallout of that, it just, everyone just kind of decided, let's take a break and see what happens. Of course, by 2010, Joey was back and, you know, everything was great. But I had a window of time in there where I started writing those songs together with Joe and Andy and Keith, you know, from the Damn Things. And we were able to do that. But then the reality of course, always is we're all in other bands. So, you know, you only get this limited amount of time to hang out with your bros and do something. And then you all got to go back to your day jobs. Mm-hmm. And so we were even lucky enough to get the second Damn Things album done a couple of years ago. We just, you know, we were able to find that space, but we weren't able to tour it really or anything. We made the record, we played some shows, but we knew going in, that's all it could be. So, I mean, when it comes to that kind of stuff, I just do it because it's fun. I mean, you talk about Motor Sister or the Damn Things, or I got asked to be in Mr. Bungle. I'm doing these things because I know it's going to be fun and I'm hanging out with my friends. It's guys, it's people I already know, people I hang out with already. And now we just get to make music together and spend more time together. So, you know, I've had opportunities to do lots of other things that I couldn't do a lot of times because I was too busy with Anthrax, you know? Yeah. So, the Mr. Bungle thing was great because it happened right at the end of an Anthrax cycle. And then of course COVID came and cut off us being able to tour, but still, yeah, at least we got to make a record and play a few shows.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So speaking of getting to do things, this just popped in my head as you were telling that. And Cody, you'll have to name off all the guys or you, Scott, but you did this, it was on YouTube, where y'all did the cover of the Game of Thrones theme.
Yeah. Oh, that was so cool. That was
it was all these badass players and then freaking Brad Paisley.
Yeah.
You
know,
yeah.
Comes in and kind of shits all over us. Like, it's like, comes in and like, you're sitting there with Nuno Betancourt and Tom Morello. Wasn't there one more lead player? Am I missing somebody?
There was one more. There was just an A-list of badasses. I mean,
it was awesome, yeah, though.
It was amazing. And Ramin, who's the composer of the theme.
Yes.
And then you had Dan Weiss, who's the showrunner and co-creator of the show, who also is a really good guitar player. He's the guy that put that whole thing together. And then Brad Paisley comes in and actually, it, to my mind, might have ripped the best solo of
absolutely
everybody.
Oh, he's a monster.
Yeah.
He's a monster. Yeah.
I thought that was really, really cool. And like you said, being asked to do things, I bet that was a pretty cool ask.
Well, yeah. I'm friends with Dan, who, like I say, he was the co-creator of the TV show. And turns out he's an old school metalhead. We met because I was in Belfast years back on one of my talk. As you missed that, Cody, I do those, my talking shows too.
Yes. And you have your podcast, Never Meet Your Heroes.
Right,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was on one of my talking tours and I was in Belfast and I figured I'm just going to run it up the flagpole because I knew they shot Game of Thrones in Belfast. So I figured maybe I could go over and check out the sets and maybe they're shooting something and like, I'll get to go watch them make the show. And a friend of mine worked for HBO, not in a not in any cool capacity. She's an accountant, like, which I guess is cool because she's signing checks for people who work on those shows. But I said, hey, I'm in Belfast. You think there's any way I could have a set visit? And she's like, let me see what I could do. And we were like walking around checking all this cool shit out. And I got to sit in the throne and everything and climb on the wall. And then at one point, this woman, she said, hold on, I got to take this call. And then 2 minutes later, she's handing me the phone. And I'm like, who is it? She says, it's Dan Weiss. And I knew who he was. He's like the writer and co-creator. And we start talking and he's like, you know, we've had a lot of people come through on set visits. And this is the first time it's someone I actually give a crap about. And I'm in the middle of the snow in Iceland somewhere shooting these scenes. And I can't be there right
and
now.
And he didn't get to meet you.
No, he's like, I bought like Among the Living when it came out. Like I've been a fan for forever. And so we stayed in contact after that, became friends and all that. And, but yeah, so that Game of Thrones guitar thing, he hit me up one day. He's like, would you want to do this thing? You know, we're teaming up with Fender and they're making these guitars and it would be you and Nuno and Morello. And I was like, yes, yes, I'm in, you know, like it was so much fun to do that. And it was cool. I just got to be the rhythm guy holding down the whole thing. Like, cause it's, you know, no rhythm section, just me. It was pretty cool.
Well, you know, and all right, that opens up another thing. Cause you know, we're all music nerds and stuff like that. You're a rhythm guy. You know, I remember shooting you a text the day Malcolm passed. We were in the studio recording and I just was so bummed.
Yeah.
I left the studio. I just left and I just went out and just put on AC/DC and just sat there and had my moment. And obviously he's a big influence on you as well. But I posted something that day. I'm talking about being a rhythm guy. I can't wheedly. You know, it's not, it doesn't make sense to me. Gosh, I texted you that day because I had posted something on Facebook about how important it is to be that guy, to lay the foundation down, like you said a while ago. And you're the timekeeper when it's just you playing the rhythm, you know, without trying to sound like too much of an ass kiss. Like you're one of the best at that I've ever heard.
Thank you.
It's hands down, you know, I mean, like you're one of my favorite guitar players because of that reason. Cause I wasn't the kid that was sitting there picking out the solo to Fade to Black. You know, I was, you know, I was going, you know, okay, here's another funny thing. Whenever we met you with Ward, when we met over at Earl's house that night and you and Pearl came over and we had dinner, like Ward just knew I was an Anthrax fan. You know, he's like, so Scott, here's this dude, Scott from Anthrax, and Ward's just watching me, you know, seeing if I'm, you know, he was just, he was watching me cause he thought it was funny. I'm sitting there trying to be cool and stuff, you know?
Right.
But the importance of guys like you and guys like Malcolm that, you know, that meant everything to me.
Yeah. I mean, he's.
Yeah. He's there it is. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I wish I could like really get back inside my like 13, 14 year old mindset, because I remember sitting in my little room in my mom's apartment at that age, listening to AC/DC records on the turntable and, you know, figuring out the chords. And then I would get to the solo and I would try and learn it. You know, I would sit there and I would try and learn Angus's parts when he was soloing. And, you know, it took a long time. I could sit there and figure out the chords after a couple of passes and know how to play the song. But then it would get to the solo and I'd be like all day trying to, and then my friends would tell me, well, the trick is slow the turntable down to 16 so you slow it down and you could pick out the notes better. So I would do that, and it would still, it was just, it would, so I don't know. I hate to use the word lazy, cause I'm definitely not a lazy person, but I just didn't want to spend the time, so much time trying to learn the solo, when in that time I could learn the whole album's worth of songs on, you know, just playing the chords. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really where it came from. It was just more exciting for me to just, all right, now I know all these songs. What's the next record I'm going to learn? Whereas one solo would have taken me a week. Like, and I just couldn't. And then, you know, we're talking AC/DC. Let's, you know, like Van Halen comes out and you're listening to that, and I'm like, I could be here till 1995. Like the next I could be here the next 18 years trying to figure this out. I'll never play it right. So, yeah, it was just, I think it was more a case of, I was just more excited about playing the songs and just getting to do that. And that's just kind of where, let someone else worry about the solos. I just want to play the chords. And that just became my thing, you know, and that's really where I learned how to play rhythm guitar, was just listening to those AC/DC records and Sabbath too. And the Ramones also, you know, Johnny was a big influence on me rhythmically. Rudy Schenker from the Scorpions, another great rhythm player. Mm-hmm. Guys like that, you know, who were just kind of focused on doing that thing. And but also that thing is a big part of the sound of those bands. Absolutely. So, and even Eddie, I mean, you know, he may be the greatest lead guitar player of all time, but he's also like the greatest rhythm player of all time. The guy had an unbelievable feel and swing, to his rhythm playing. And, you know, so even his rhythm playing is not easy to copy. You could kind of do it, but it's never his feel, because it was unlike anyone else's. He's my number two. Like Malcolm's my favorite, but Eddie would actually be my second, my number two in rhythm players, which I know most people don't think about him that way.
I listened to some ISO Eddie playing rhythm. Because we're all nerds and we do shit like that.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
What are you doing? Listening to some ISO'd Eddie playing rhythm?
Oh, all the time.
Sounds phenomenal. No, it's great. You gotta listen. The dude never messed up.
Yeah. We with Mr. Bungle, we did a live stream back over Halloween, and we covered Loss of Control. We were actually going to cover it for the record back months earlier. Mike Patton had brought that up. Like, what do you think about Loss of Control from Van Halen? Like, and we all loved it, but then we just didn't learn it. And then when it came time to do the live stream and we needed to fill out the set, so that came up again. And it was kind of, you know, tragically, the timing was right because Eddie had just passed too. So we looked at it as, all right, well, this will be a great way to pay tribute to one of our heroes. And we learned Loss of Control, and I found some ISO tracks of him playing that. And I mean, it's just, it's seemingly such an easy part. It's kind of like the riff from Rock and Roll from Led Zeppelin. It's seemingly just like an easy A riff with a couple of pull offs, but man, you know, with his mojo on it, it just becomes this tongue twister of a bastard of a riff. And you just like, fuck you, Eddie Van Halen. Why are you so good?
Well, he made it look easy. That's what you said. The seemingly easy stuff, you know, it's the really good ones make it look that way, make it sound that way.
And of course, like we're covering that, and you know, I can't fuck it up. We're doing a live stream, and like I can't be the guy who then, but you know, clammed up the Eddie Van Halen riff. So, I mean, I spent weeks practicing that riff, you know, to nail it. Cause I was more nervous about that song than any of the, and the Bungle stuff is not easy to play. And that one part from Loss of Control, I was more worried about that than anything else we were doing. Cause I didn't want to be that guy.
Yeah. Well, but okay. You know, being the rhythm guy, but I've heard you play lead. You played when I was out in LA last year, you and me and Pearl got to do Wish You Were Here at Dime Bash.
Right.
And you played lead that night. And you were great.
I don't remember the whole. Well, you know, I'd done that before, and I know that song. It's kind of that part's imprinted in my brain. So, you know, I can play lead. And if I feel like it's one of the things I almost did, and I can still do, I'm thinking about taking guitar lessons, because like I see my son started taking, he's been taking guitar lessons and drum lessons, but he started taking drum lessons with this guy, Thomas Lang. And if you don't know who he is, Google it. He's pretty much the best drummer on the planet. And he's got a music school not far from where we are. And he accepted Revel as a student. And Revel's only been doing it lessons with him now for about 2 months. But the elevation in his playing, when you're learning from a guy who is just a master, it's pretty incredible to see what Revel is doing now as a drummer. I mean, he could play with my band at this point. Like, he could learn Anthrax songs and play them. And it really made me start thinking, like, maybe I should just decide on something I want to improve as a guitar player and find a guy. Cause I know plenty of amazing guitarists, like from other bands, and, you know, guys like Monty Pittman or who else am I thinking? John Donay in my band, our lead guitar player, guys that give lessons that maybe I'd be able to sit and, you know, up my lead game, or go somewhere totally different and learn how to play jazz chords, you know, like, and just go somewhere completely different. But I'm thinking in the next month or so, it's something I might start doing, is actually take guitar lessons and become a better guitar player.
That's, you know, that's awesome, because there's never, I mean, dude, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, Anthrax started in 81.
Yeah.
I mean, so y'all are coming on 40 years, and you're sitting here, you know, you're in one of the most successful metal bands of all time, and you're talking about taking guitar lessons. I think that's awesome, because there's always room to grow.
Always.
And, you know, the thing about it is that in our business, I don't feel like you're really in your prime until you're over 40, over 35. I mean, that's when you know. That's when you know, you're a professional athlete. You know, by 35, you're an old man, but you can always get better on the guitar.
Oh, yeah. Always. I watch people play, guys I admire, you know, just other guitar players, and I watch them do things sometimes, and I'm like, oh man, it would be really fun to be able to do that. And I think, well, you could, you just need to put the time in, and you could do that. And I think I finally gotten to the point where I want to. I think being the time I spent with the Mr. Bungle guys, because Trey, the lead player, and Trevor, the bass player, are like trained, like they're like real musicians. Like, they started music theory in high school, like when they were 15. They're like the dudes who, like, they can, like, Trey writes concertos for the Kronos Quartet. Like, I don't know, like when he explains this stuff to me, it's almost like he needs to translate it and really dumb it down to a language I can understand. But
yeah,
like, I'm like, what do you mean you write? He goes, I write all the parts for the different instruments. And I said, you mean you actually write it, or you, like, you recorded it? You, like, you make demos? He goes, no, I have the charts, and I write all the bass parts, and I write all the string parts. And he shows me, like, the sheet music, and he writes it. I mean, you literally need to be an artist, first of all, to even be able to write all those Absolutely. Musical notes. Like, and so these guys are so steeped in theory and knowledge of where they are on their instrument and every single thing they're playing. And I just, like, they'll have a chord, and I just call, oh, it's one of them weird chords with a extra note here that makes it sound diminished. Or,
you sound like Cody in the studio.
Yeah, it makes it sound eviler. I'm like, when you play that note there, because it makes it sound more evil. And they're like, well, yeah, it's the minor third, blah 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 blah. And I'm
it's an A sustained four. It's what the fuck? I don't know.
And I know a little bit of that stuff, because when I first started, you know, 9, 10 years old taking guitar lessons, I was learning how to read and write music, and I got super bored of that instantly. I'm like, just teach me how to play Zeppelin songs. I don't care about any of this. But after spending a bunch of time with those guys, it really is sticking with me that I need to step up my ability as a guitar player. And I haven't quite decided yet what that's going to be like, cause I don't need to be a lead guitar player. So I don't think I need to go take a bunch of lessons and, you know, try and be Steve Vai. That's not what I want to do, but leaning more towards just theory and learning more about chords and being able to play a crazy chord and know exactly what I'm doing and why it is, like the almost kind of like the math behind it. Because I'm a math brain kind of guy, so I think that's what I want to start doing.
I think that's really interesting, and it's funny that you're saying this, Scott, because I've actually been going through the exact same thought process in my head of, okay, here I am. I can be better, you know, and especially now that we all know that, hey, this thing isn't going to end for a while. Let's create some new habits, some better habits. I think that's interesting, and I think it's great. And maybe we can have a buddy system of keeping each other accountable. Yeah. Because I mean, seriously, because there is a little bit of that. But, you know, I think that ability of, okay, the why.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Why does it? And that does, you know, will help. Yes. I really do. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. When they would break down, not to get like super nerdy music talk, but like when they were breaking down some of the riffs and sending me videos of the Bungle songs, because like some of it was pretty difficult and a lot of weird chords that I never would have been able to figure out just from listening to it. And so Trey would send me videos and he would talk about these patterns. Well, you'll probably notice these diminished blah, blah, blah. And he would start reeling off all these names of scales and things. And I'm like, I hear what he's saying, that I'm hearing the same type of things happen different places on the neck, but I don't know what any of it means when he's telling me what it is. Like I could hear what he's talking about, but if someone said, all right, I want you to play this, I'd be like, I don't know what? Like, no, yeah. I don't know how to do that.
You got tabs for that?
Yeah. even tabs are too much. Just show me. Like,
you know, the funny thing is, like, Josh said a while ago, like me in the studio, and we've made a lot of records together, and you know, Josh produces them, and you know, we'll be in the studio working on something, and you know, being, you know, playing country music, we use capo a lot sometimes, right. It's better to, you know, wherever it sounds better, and get one acoustic capoed at two and one acoustic not, and all this kind of stuff. And I'll go in and show the guys the songs, and they go, well, what key are you in? And I'm like, I think I'm in C. I don't know. What key am I in, Josh? And he'll be like, that's G, yeah. Cody.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, and all those guys can read music. I can't. And I don't know what my daughter had this strange epiphany the other day that I was as dumb as she thought I was. She's taking piano. She's learning how to read music. And she was like, Dad, can you read this and play along?
Right.
And I said, I have no idea what that is. So we're sitting there in the studio and it's like, okay, you know, we're going to be in the key. We're going to be in E flat. And it's like, okay, we're sitting there talking about, and not a lot of people know what the number system is. Mm. And, you know, somebody will go, you know, do I go, is it 1-4-5 or 1-5-4-4? Or like, where are we going on? Where do we go to the two minor there or whatever? And I just wait for all the smart people to stop talking. And then I look at Josh and go, what does that mean? Is that a D? What are we going back to the D? I was like, did y'all just like all that shit just to say to go back to the D? You know, it's like, that's me, man. It's like working with a kindergartner in there.
Have you seen that? Have you seen that documentary about the Wrecking Crew?
Yes.
Yeah. I've always known about those guys and how all the records they played on and all that, but watching that documentary and, you know, just that ability for those guys to do anything. People put the music in front of them, yeah. And they were able to just bang that shit out and take the written music, and then, you know, with their feel and their awesome abilities and stuff, and turning it to something better than what was written on the page. But that ability to sight read like that, and I mean, what it's almost, to me, it may as well be a superpower at like what sitting here today. But it's a superpower that I would actually have. I could gain that superpower. No one's going to give it to me, but if I work real hard at it, and it would be something that I think would be really cool to be able to do. I don't know how much it'll actually mean in my life going forward. You know what I mean? Like, when am I going to use it all that much? But why not have that? You know, I don't know. It just seems like I should have started 10 years ago, but I'm sitting here now and it's like, all right, you know, maybe it's time.
Well, it is. It's always the time. And I've been doing the same thing, you know, since we've been off. I went through a few months where I was, you know, I didn't pick a guitar up all that much, you know,
maybe, same thing. Yeah.
You know, maybe, but like lately I've been working at it again. And like right now I'm a better guitar player than I was a year ago.
Right.
I might have been a better guitar player the year before that, but it's because we were on the road, you know. I mean, so constantly working at it is, like I said, you know, it never goes away. You're always able to get better. And the old guys are the tasty guys. You know, it's like you can jack a guitar off. I mean, you can,
right, of course,
you know,
right,
or you can hit one note and go,
yeah.
And do it the right way, and you make the damn song. You know, it's yeah. I love it, man.
Hey, you know what's cool is that he has an action figure.
Scott does have his own action figure. Yeah, I don't have a Scott Ian action figure. I have a James Hetfield and a Lemmy.
Well, I'll have to get you one.
I need a Scott. He also has his own beer. And
I've got some. I think I have a few figures left in the house. I'll send you one.
And his own whiskey. And y'all should be getting a package from us, because whenever Pearl was on, we were talking about him.
She just got it.
Did she get it? Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Rebecca dropped the ball. Rebecca was like, I'll send it to her. I want to write her a note. And that was like a month ago. And I'm like, send that package. You know, anyway. So good. I'm glad you guys got it. I'll tell Rebecca.
I definitely have some downstairs. I don't keep my own guy hanging around, just the other stuff from that are not me or my band.
Your little you just following you around?
No.
Carries it in his pocket. Hey,
no, I just have the super cool stuff hanging around like this.
Oh, that's cool.
Star Wars. Okay. I need to thank you. I need to thank you and your family for turning me onto that. I was 39 before I watched my first Star Wars.
It's amazing.
Now I've watched all of them, and we're on The Mandalorian now. Uh-huh. So when I remember when we went out to fly the spaceship.
The Millennium Falcon.
The Millennium Falcon. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And you guys were like, you've never seen a Star Wars? And I was like, no, I hadn't. And I didn't know how to fly the Millennium Falcon, because I had never, and it was telling me to do something, and you were like, you got to hit the thing and like boost the thruster up or something. I was like, I didn't know where the thruster was, man.
It's amazing. Yeah. You got to go to the Star Wars land at Disneyland and you had never seen a movie.
Never.
It's for me, that's kind of amazing. Like to see it through your eyes the thing I'm actually jealous of is the idea that you got to watch New Hope and Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Like now, like for me, you know, I've seen those movies 100 times each, but like you're seeing them, you saw them just now for the first time.
Yeah.
Like I wish I could have that experience again.
And we watched them sequentially. We went,
right.
Like the real 1, 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
1, 2, 3, sure. 3, 4, you know, all that.
Right.
And anyway, love it. Yeah. So I thought it was funny. Cause at that point, everybody's seen Star Wars. Everybody loves Star Wars. And it was kind of one of those things. It was like a battle of attrition. I was just like, I've made it 39 years and I hadn't watched one, you know, and now I just think it's funny.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's great.
But man, you know, it's good. They're good stories. Like I said, we just started The Mandalorian as well. And what's cool that our mutual friend, Earl Brown, is in The Mandalorian.
Yep.
Which is super cool. And I talked to him probably about a month ago, and we were talking about that and how neat it is to be a part of the Star Wars period.
Yeah. You mentioned me being an actor. I'm actually trying, because I've got to be in The Walking Dead. You know, I got made up as a zombie, and I got as Greg Nicotero, my buddy, who's one of the executive producers on that show. He said, "I'll make sure you get a really good death. I'll get you a good close up." And he did. They got the pole going through my head, real good close up of that. And I want to be an alien on Mandalorian. Like that's my next goal as an actor. Just cover my face and everything. I'm the best.
So as the zombie, did they keep the beard? So
it was totally.
Did they make you shave it off?
No. They just had it, like, they put this stuff in it and then they basically glued it down.
Oh,
to my neck. Okay. And then I had a whole fake. It was a whole fake application, like a chin over it.
Gotcha.
It was you couldn't tell.
I just didn't know there was going to be a Scotty in. I mean, because there's only one of those. Everybody knows.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, oh, dude, Scotty Ian just died.
He was. Why wouldn't I be? What? You know, I already had made a backstory for myself, too. I was like, well, I died protecting my family so they could get away. And now I'm a walker, like in the Zombieland, you know, Zombieland movies, you know. Well, Bill Murray wasn't a zombie. They thought he was a zombie. But anyway. So I would love to be an alien on Mandalorian, to get to be in that universe. Like, I don't need a speaking role like Earl had. That was an actual real part, but
yeah,
just a background alien.
Just make me look cool.
Yeah. One of those cantina scenes.
And one of the cantina scenes. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, I don't see why that couldn't happen at some point. We're just trying to find the right John Favreau, the guy who created it. You sure, you know, John Favreau is a guy who created the Marvel Universe movies. Mm-hmm. He went to college with my brother a million years ago back in New York. And we bumped into each other once at House of Blues years ago. And he said, "Hey, I'm John Favreau." I'm like, "Yeah, I know." And he said, "I went to college with your brother." I'm like, "Yeah, I know." And we ended up having a drink and talked for 15 minutes, and super cool dude. So I figured if there's a way for me to get a hold of that guy somehow. And I just said, "Hey, throw me," because my buddy Brian Posehn got to be in Mandalorian. He's in like the first scene of the first episode. He's driving the land speeder. He's like an Uber driver, basically, in that universe.
Yeah, with the old guy. Was he the one in the old beat up?
He's driving the land speeder that the Mandalorian gets in. He's got that alien, and he's got it. And then he takes him to wherever he's got to go, and then he drives off, and he gets eaten by a big monster in the ice. Yeah,
because he said no droids, because they pull up like his Uber driver's like, no droids. So like, here comes this dude in this old beat up piece of shit land speeder. Okay, that's rad, man.
I figure if I could just somehow get a hold of Favreau, somehow I'd get to put some makeup on and stand around in the background.
That's badass.
Listen to this. You never.
Yeah. Know. So anyone out there listening,
we're lobbying here.
You know, send the note. Someone send the note. I even tried DMing him on his Instagram, which I know the guy's got millions of, and I even wrote, I said, "I know you're never checking this, but in case you do."
That's awesome, man. I love it, man. You know, it's something I'd like to get into, because as well as, you know, being off, you know, doing voiceover work, doing, you know, just anything, you know, other than what I normally do, just try to stretch a little bit and try to, you know, figure some things. I was like, man, I'll read an Audible book, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to do that. I would love to exercise the acting thing, the spoken thing, the, you know, all those kinds of things, because, you know, like yourself, you know, it's very multifaceted, I guess. Right. I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, yes. you got your hand in a whole lot of different cookie jars.
You know, what was cool, speaking, made me think, out of the Bungle experience, this was back, I don't know, about late last summer around, Dave Lombardo, who's, you know, Dave Lombardo, mm-hmm. but he's also in Bungle with me. He hit me up and he said, "Hey man, my buddy is this film composer and he's got this movie he's working on and he wanted to know if you'd be interested in maybe doing some guitar playing on this movie score. I'm going to go in and do some drums on it. Could be cool, you know?" So he goes, "Do you mind if I hook you up with him?" I said, "No, not at all." And so I end up talking to this guy. His name is Phil Eisler. And he's doing the score for this movie called Thunder Force, which is a Netflix movie. It's coming on in April. And it's a superhero comedy with Melissa McCarthy and Octavia Spencer and Bobby Cannavale and Jason Bateman. And anyway, Melissa McCarthy's character, she's like an old school metalhead. Like since she was a kid, she loved heavy metal. And I'm not going to go too much into the details, but she ends up, she's got superpowers. And so there's about 20 minutes worth of scenes in the movie where she's fucking shit up and the score gets real heavy, like guitar metal, you know, and the composer Phil also old school metalhead, like saw Anthrax play Brixton Academy. He's a British guy, saw us play like in London in 89, like old school metalhead dude as well. And so Lombardo and I got to spend a week back in like, I want to say September, I think it was, at a studio here in LA. And it was me and Dave and the composer Phil played bass. And we played on all these cues for the movie where it's the three of us playing guitar, bass and drums along with the full orchestra in these score parts. And it's so big and so heavy. And all these parts that this guy Phil came up with, like someone would be like 15 seconds, you know, when there's some crazy action going on, or 30 seconds long, maybe some a little bit longer than that. But then Phil and I also wrote and Corey from Slipknot, we co-wrote the theme song for the movie as well, which they ended up, Melissa and her husband Ben, who is the director of the movie, they ended up loving it and putting it in as the theme song for the movie too. We wrote a song called
How cool is that? That comes out in April, you said?
It comes, yeah, they moved it up. It was going to be summer and it got moved up to April on Netflix. Yeah, so
that's awesome. I'm
super excited. The experience was amazing. And you know, it was weird, of course it was COVID, so but every day there was like 11 or 12 of us with crew people and engineers and whatnot. So every day we'd show up at the studio 11 a.m you'd stand outside in this little area, the nurse would come, we'd all get swabbed 20 minutes later negative. And then we were all able to work without masks on. Some of the engineer and main Pro Tools dude would always wear his mask anyway, which was good. But you'd be able to work, you know. So we worked 8-9 days, and every day everyone would test negative, and it went amazing. And it just felt so good to like play loud music in a room, like me mm-hmm. and Lombardo just like cranking it up. Like we'd get in the room and start jamming Slayer songs and whatnot, Yeah, it was just like, wow, it feels so good to play loud.
Yeah. So do they like actually, are they actually showing the scene on like a big screen? Like that whole thing?
Yeah, we had monitors set up. Yeah, monitors and time code, because a lot of time you see the time code and they've got to create count-ins mm-hmm. for when you're in and you're out and all that kind of stuff. And it was such a great experience. It's the second time I've gotten to do something like that. Years ago, Anthrax got to do a bunch of scoring on the John Carpenter movie Ghost of Mars back in the 90s. And we got to do that with him. But technology's come so far since like 97. So doing it now, like even it was more fun, just even easier. A great experience. Something that I would love to get to do more of, actually. Get to, you know, throw down even if it's not necessarily metal stuff, just go play guitar on stuff like that. And if I could sight read, I'd really be able to do stuff like that.
And it goes back full circle and now we get our lessons and let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on this just, and we'll let you go here in a minute, man. But you guys did something that really had never been done before. And I don't know if a lot of people remember who it was, but they damn sure remember the song, and they might not know that it was Anthrax and Public Enemy. But man, tell me about how that came to be. And that was back in 90, right?
Yeah, when we did it.
It was like the first like metal and hip hop tour.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Like you guys went out and toured together, and anybody in the music business in their right mind would say, this is not going to work, but it worked. And it was awesome.
When we did the tour, it was actually fall of 91 because the record had come out that summer. It was on our Attack of the Killer Bees thing that we put out, and that had Bring the Noise on it. And it had also come out on Public Enemy's record as well at the time, our collaborative version of it. But the tour was fall of 91, and we were coming off, we were out on the Clash of the Titans tour the summer of 91, which was us, Slayer, Megadeth, and when Alice in Chains opening. And when we were out on that tour, in the middle of that tour, like some point in July, we went on a day off. We flew to Chicago. We met Chuck and Flav there to shoot a video, the video for Bring the Noise. And it was, we had such a great time that whole day shooting it out. So we had this crazy setup. If you've seen the video, you know, but anyway, we were in this van on the way back to the hotel, you know, late that night when we were done. And I was like, man, that was like, God, it was so much fun. We need to do more of that. And he's like, let's put it together. And I said, you mean like shows, an actual tour? And he said, anytime, anywhere, Scotty. And our manager, Johnny, was there. I said, you hear that? Start calling people, motherfucker.
Make it happen,
so,
dude.
Yeah. So cut to, here it is, October 91. And it was Anthrax, Public Enemy, Primus, and this group, a rap group called the Young Black Teenagers opening. That was the first year we felt like this is truly alternative. Like, cause it was around that time when that word started getting thrown around for music, because that summer 91 was the first Lollapalooza tour as well, I believe. And of course that became the, you know, alternative scene, alternative music. And I'm like, well, don't get me wrong, I love a lot of the bands on that Lollapalooza that summer. That first one, I went to it. I saw it twice. But how is it alternative when it's all kind of the same? It's all those bands will get played on the same radio station. So what is it an alternative to? I didn't really get it. But what I thought we were doing, when you have Anthrax, Public Enemy, and Primus, now that's alternative. That's shaking some shit up.
That is shaking some shit up. And I love all of those. Like, those are, I had Tales from the Punch Bowl in the other day. Like, I love Primus. That's great shit, dude.
So, you know, we were like, let's really do something different. Let's really, you know, throw something out there that's a challenge for people. And maybe to our own self detriment, but I mean, obviously the tour did well, especially here in the States. It was a great tour. In Europe, it worked well. In England, I don't know that the Germans were as ready for Anthrax, Public Enemy. They were a little bit confused. There was not nearly as much of a, not that there was a big crossover scene happening yet in America either, but it worked better here. Like, we'd be able to play to 10,000 people on that tour, and you felt the people, you saw the light bulbs going off and the metalheads and the people that were in the Public Enemy, and you saw they understood and made sense in their brains. Maybe not as much in Germany at the time, but certainly here it worked so well, and it was such a fun tour. And I just have like the fondest, I mean, I have it here. One sec.
All right.
So Scott's getting up to go. He's getting photo's a picture.
He's grabbing his picture.
This photo has been on my wall in office or jam rooms, I mean, literally since 1991.
That's awesome. It was
from something Chuck and I did for some magazine, and we're sitting in a hotel lobby, and the guy was trying to find something not boring.
Yeah.
And
that's
like,
a great picture, man.
Why don't you guys go sit down at the piano over there? And we just look at each other. We just start laughing. Oh, Ebony and Ivory. Real original. So we were just doing our best to not laugh while the guy was, but I just loved the way the photo came out. And then I just found out recently, I saw some thing that Chuck did online, like just a couple of months ago. And he's got this same photo on framed on his desk, and he said it's been there literally since like the early 90s. We both have the same photo up. He goes, I see you every day. I'm like, I see you every day.
That is really awesome.
I love that, man. That's what it's about. That's why I wanted to bring that story up, because you are known as the metal guy, but you're a music guy first and foremost. And music is obviously the most important thing in all of our lives. And thank you for sharing that story. And I think that's even cooler, not where I thought it was going to go. That's right.
Oh, right on.
But all right, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about a situation I read in your book. I know you're a huge Yankees fan. Mm-hmm. Would you please let us know how you got arrested at spring training?
Well, I could just put the blame on alcohol, but not everybody drinks and then does that. So it has a lot to do. It was a perfect storm of shit. Like, just, I had been cut to, it was 97. And so I had gone down to Florida for this. I think I get some of the details right. I'm pretty sure it was this guitar show at a store called Thoroughbred Music, like in Tampa. They used to do, it was like almost like a mini NAMM, where they would do this big, and lots of manufacturers would come, and they'd get artists to come. And anyway, but if memory serves, I had been drinking pretty heavily with Zach Wilde that day. And I'm not a day drinker. And I'd been drinking pretty heavy with him. And then that thing ended around 6-7 o'clock. And I had a bunch of friends in Tampa, and we go out to dinner, and I continued drinking. And then we went out to a bar, and I mean, these were my drinking days. I mean, if I had to pick a period of time, 95 through 2005, like kind of that 10 years was when I could hit it pretty hard and handle it. And so I was drunk. And so it's the end of the night, bars closed, and driving back to my buddy's house to drink more. And we happened to pass Legends Field, which it was called at the time. And it's where the Yankee spring training stadium was. And I saw it, and I was like, oh, Legends Field. They just put up the Thurman Munson Monument, who, he was my favorite Yankee ever since I was a kid, and died tragically in a plane crash that he was flying in 1979. And so they put up a monument to him, and I was like, let's go see it. And my buddy's like, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. We'll come back tomorrow. And I'm like, no, we can go right now. And I tried to hop out of the car at the red light, and he was able to hit the door locks before I could get out. And I was like, what is this, a cop car? Why can't I open this thing now? Like, and so anyway, we get back to his house, and I was like, I was on a mission at that point in the drunken state. I was like, I must see the Thurman Munson Monument. And I convinced another one of my friends to drive me back there. Well, you know, all of your best decisions are made after drinking for 14 hours.
And that's why I brought this up, Scott.
Yeah. So long story short, you know, we get back there. I hop the fence, which was really easy to break in the Legends Field at the time. And I walk up into the stadium, down through the seats, jump onto the field, and I run around like an idiot for 20 minutes, sliding headfirst into home plate. And I mean, just like a total jackass. And then I'd had enough, and I was dirty and cold and wet and drunk, and went walking back out to hop the fence to where my friends were waiting for me. And I could already see flashing lights. And I didn't think that anything of it, 'cause in my state, I didn't think I had actually done anything wrong. And I see all the cops standing there, and I see my friends like sitting on the curb with their hands behind their back, and still not thinking anything's wrong. And I'm just kind of a big drunk, smiley, happy. I just ran around the bases like an idiot. And next thing you know, the cop throws me over the hood of the car, and it got my hands behind my back, and he's cuffing me. And I'm like, what did I do? He's like, how about breaking and entering, asshole? You know, and like, just, I'm like, what? And now a little sliver of reality is starting to penetrate the fog. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, and they sit me down on the curb, you know, and And I'm like, wow. I look at my friend and I'm like, what's going on? They're like, we're arrested. They're going to take us to jail. I'm like, well, why you? And they're like, and they ended up letting her go. She just drove me there. But yeah. So again, long story short, I'm sitting there and there's like six cops standing around. And one of these cops comes over and he's like, aren't you the dude from Anthrax? I'm like, oh, yes. Oh, my savior, right? And I said, I am. And he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, it's just a stupid drunk prank. You know, I was out drinking all day at this thoroughbred music thing. And anyway, you know, if there's any way you could get me out of this. And he's like, let me see what I could do. And he walks back over and he starts talking to the other police. And then these two guys pull up on a golf cart. And I could see they're the security for Legends Field. And he's talking to them. And they they take off. And he comes back over. He's like, good news and bad news. He's like, the good news is all the other cops don't give a shit if you go to jail or not. Because I just said, yeah, it's a stupid prank. Guy from a band, blah, blah, blah. I'll just drive him back to his hotel. He'll sleep it off. No harm, no foul. But the Legends Field security guys who weren't used to policemen, like, saying that they don't care. They're like, well, we don't know that we could just let him go. We have to call the boss, and the boss being George Steinbrenner.
Steinbrenner got involved in this situation.
Yes, who was the owner of the Yankees. And if you know anything about your baseball history in the Yankees, you know that Steinbrenner was a notorious hard ass, and which I, of course, knew. And they said, well, we need to call the boss. That was his name, the boss, because we can't just let him go. It seems weird that we would just let him go. So they had taken off, and it's like 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm thinking, well, this can't be good.
You're going to wake the boss up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Because some jackass in a band broke into the stadium.
To see the Munson statue.
Ran the bases.
So about 15 minutes later, they come. And I'm just sitting there. I sobered up real quick. And I'm just sitting there shooting the shit with a couple of these cops now. And the security guys come pulling back up about 15 minutes later in their golf cart, and the cop goes, talks to me, comes back. He's like, oh, bad news, man. He said, I got to take you to jail. And I'm like, really? Like, everything seemed to be going so well. Like, can't you just take me back to my hotel? You know, he's like, I can't, man. It's on the books. And I said, what happened? He goes, well, you really want to know? I said, yeah, I want to know. And he said, well, they said they woke up Mr. Steinbrenner. And they told him the scenario, and that the police, you know, said it was just a stupid prank, and the police are just going to drive him back to his hotel. And they said Mr. Steinbrenner's exact words were, I don't give a shit who he is. He's going to jail. So I was like, damn it.
You did wake him up.
Yeah, they woke him up. So at least the cop, at least he goes, look, with jurisdiction where we are, I'm supposed to take you downtown. He said, but that would be pretty gnarly because, like, there'll be actual criminals. You'd be in a holding cell with actual violent criminals.
Like real bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that have been picked up in the last few hours. And I don't want to put you in there. He goes, so if you don't mind, it's a bit of a longer drive out to the suburbs, but you'll basically be you're just going to be in a big, basically like a high school cafeteria with a bunch of drunks sleeping off DUIs. I said, yes, please. We can go there.
Like, I'll have that. Yeah. Thank you very much, sir.
So he drove me out there and wished me luck. And I got processed into Hillsborough County Jail. And I had my orange jumpsuit on. And it was my first time ever. I was never arrested before in my life or since. And to make another long story short preface, the whole thing turned into a big mess for me. It cost a lot of money to hire a criminal lawyer because they had two felony charges against me. My lawyer tried to get them to just drop the charges, but their lawyer said, we'd love to, but because of insurance reasons, we can't just let this go. Because what if some other drunk guy in the middle of the night hops our fence and drowns in one of the ponds on our property? And then there's a lawsuit and someone digs up the fact that this got dropped at some point. He goes, we actually legally, we have to prosecute this to the full extent because of our insurance policy. and we can't just let it go. I'm sorry, I know it's a stupid thing, but we can't just let it go. And I had to spend all this money on a criminal lawyer and all this. And then the whole thing got solved when Howard Stern got wind of what was going on. And because I was in the newspaper, I was in Rolling Stone magazine. They had my mugshot. Like, and, you know, they say all publicity is good publicity. And I guess this kind of made me believe it was when then Howard Stern had me and George Steinbrenner come on his show. And I got to personally apologize to the owner of the Yankees about, you know, about running around like an idiot in his stadium. And he was very, very nice to me. And about 2 weeks later, they dropped all the charges due to what they said was lack of evidence. And even though apparently they had me on video, clearly, because they have cameras. And then I asked my lawyer, you think we could get a copy of that tape? And he's like, there's no fucking way I'm calling the Yankees and asking them. He goes, just shut up and be happy that it's over. Yeah,
just stop. Just, man, you're ahead. Just stop. Just quit. You're good.
He's like, do you really want me to open that door again and go do community service down in Florida? You know, I'm like, no, I'm good. And so, yeah. And then Howard had us back on again after the charges were dropped, and Howard busted my balls for 45 minutes. Like, can't believe you're just gonna let him off that easy. You should at least make him go clean the gum off every seat in Yankee Stadium or like something like that. Or, and I was like, come on, man.
I love that story. It's so good. It's such a good read. And you have several books out, two that I have here at the house, but that's in the I'm the Man book. But one of the funniest parts of that was you called your dad, and your dad said, son, how old are you?
Yeah. Like, I didn't know what to, like I said, I'd never been arrested before. And so I got my, I knew enough to ask, well, do I get my phone call? Like, I've seen enough television to know. And they go, yeah, this officer in the jail, he just said, there's a phone over there. You can make as many collect calls as you want. I'm like, oh, okay. Right. And, because I literally was. It's like 6:30 in the morning, and it was just a bunch of dudes laying out on these shitty like couches and tables. People just sleeping DUIs and me, right? And so I went and used the phone, and I didn't know who to call. So I was like, call my dad, wake my dad up. And the first thing he hears, and if you've been arrested, you know, before you could get a word out, really, the person on the other end hears a recording saying you are being called by an inmate in a correctional facility.
Yeah.
So that's where you're at.
Yeah. That's the first thing my father hears. And he's like, hello, like, who is this? Hello. Like, and he's like, is this a joke? And I'm like, dad, don't hang up. It's me. It's me. And he's like, what's going on? What do you mean a correctional facility? What was that? And I said, well, are you sitting down? He's like, I'm sleeping. Yeah, I'm like, I'm laying down. And I said, yeah, I got arrested last night. I'm okay. Physically, everything's fine. But I got arrested and I need a lawyer. I need to get bailed out. Like, maybe you could like call somebody, like call your lawyer and ask him what to do. And he's like, wait, hold on. Like, back that up 1 second. Why did you get arrested? And I broke into the Yankee spring training field down here, and I was running the bases and looked at the Thurman Munson statue, and the cops were waiting for me because they were watching me on video running around like an asshole. And my dad doesn't, there's like a long silent pause, and he says, how old are you? I had to think for a second. 33.
Oh, man. Oh, my Lord. It's awesome.
33.
Yeah, not 17.
No.
33.
No. You've been a grown up for a minute by 33.
Yeah.
God, I love it. Anyway, thank you for sharing that story. I enjoyed reading that in your book. So I had a note to bring that up, but
right,
tell you what, man, we could sit here and rap all day.
Hell yeah.
I know we could, but you know, for the sake of the show and I'm trying not to monopolize too much of your time.
Yeah, no worries. And I'm going to return the favor by having you on my Sirius show. So please, I'm going to talk to them and then we'll schedule that.
I would love that very, very much. But before we end, we have a short little segment that Josh and Bobby Keith, they're going to grill your ass.
Okay.
They have a sequence of questions, and it's called "Why Do I Know This?" So, okay. All right, boys, beat him up.
All right, go ahead, Bobby Keith.
Morning person or a night owl?
Oh, morning person.
Favorite 2 a.m. meal?
Favorite 2 a.m. meal. Oh, my gosh. These days, if I'm up that late, it's going to be something bad. God, I'm such a grown up. I like don't eat late at night anymore. Well, I'll just go back. Favorite 2 a.m. meal, In-N-Out Burger.
Yep. And then favorite video game, past or present?
Favorite video game present would be... I don't play video games. Something Revel's been playing. Forza, that car racing game. Forza 4, I think we've been playing. That's a lot of fun. And past, back in the old days, I was definitely a Ms. Pac-Man kind of guy.
Oh, man, showing your age there, Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah. do you believe in ghosts?
No.
No.
Although I did see one once, and it's still to this day unexplainable. So, but it hasn't been enough to really twice. Fully tip me over to the idea that I mean, let me answer it this way. I love the idea, and I won't say they don't exist, but I don't also at the same time believe wholeheartedly. So I'm kind of still in the middle.
That's really funny because our last guest, Courtney Patton, is the exact. She's seen one, but still doesn't believe in ghosts. That's really, really funny.
Yeah, anyway. I saw something I can't explain one time. Pearl and I, not to get off on a tangent, I know it's supposed to be rapid fire. Pearl's dad once shot a pilot for a ghost hunter show because he's totally into that. He watches all those shows and he's totally into the supernatural and it was called like Meatloaf's Para versus Normal. And it was Meat and his other daughter, Amanda. They were the believers and Pearl and I were the skeptics. And we basically went on a ghost hunt at Sunset Sound here in LA, which is a notoriously amazing recording studio, as well as notoriously there many ghost stories have come out of that building. It's been a studio for ages and ages, but there were also these old apartments that used to be attached to it that people died in and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, over the course of that evening, we ended up seeing something that we still to this day can't explain. But at the same time, it's weird. So maybe my answer should be, yes, I believe in ghosts after all that bullshit.
All right.
Have you ever ran a vehicle out of gas?
Yes.
Would you like
Hell
to
yeah, man. He's in a band. I mean, like,
I thought you were going to say, would you like to do that again? No. it was when I was a kid, just being an idiot thinking, oh, it's don't worry. There's a reserve tank. Oh, and then, you know, 4 mile walk with the gas can. And yeah, it sucked.
Never is. And lastly, if you were to go on the Letterman show for stupid human tricks, what would your trick be?
Oh, man. Stupid human
show? No.
If I got my time machine.
Yeah.
Stupid human tricks. And I could, I don't know that I have anything good enough. I always think about that guy who put the high speed fan on and would stop it with his tongue. That image sticks in my mind. Like still to this day watching that. Cause I was like, no, don't do it. Like, shit, I don't know. Other than my fast right hand down picking, I don't know that I have a. I don't know that I have a stupid human trick.
But that's your best trick though.
Yeah,
that's your best one.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah, rip that one. I like
lightning
it.
Lightning fast downstrokes.
Yeah. It's true. I spent the majority of my teenage years trying to do that. Yeah. Man, Scott, dude, I tell you what, brother, it has just been a pleasure to have you on. I hope this wasn't too much of an ass whipping.
Oh, this was great.
We were, you know, looking forward to having you on, and you're a hero of mine, but you know, what's even cooler than that is, you know, now I can call you a friend. So
yeah, man.
So thank you so much. We love you. We love your family. Say hi to Revel.
Same here. We love you and love your family, brother.
And Pearl. And, you know, it's been a treat to have both you and Pearl on a couple in. So we'll go ahead and close it out, man. I just can't thank you enough. Up top left. Now y'all switch places. We got Bobby Keith Kilgore in the top left. Thank you, buddy.
Hey, thank you, man.
And we got Josh Thompson now on my bottom left. And then the very, very bottom is Seth Noseworthy. Thank you for turning the knob, Seth. And Scott Ian. Man, thank you, brother.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Don't forget all those right. action figures.
Cheers, guys. I won't.
I'm just kidding.
All right, guys. Y'all been listening. Oh, hey, I forgot to ask you, Scott, plug. What do you got?
Plugs. Oh, yeah. Plugs. We're finishing the Motor Sister record. That's what I got going on right now. Finished guitars the other week. Pearl and Jim sang a bunch of it last week. They go back in the studio tomorrow, actually, with Jay Russin to do more vocals. And I would think it should be ready to mix in another week or two. We don't know when. We still got to figure out what the plan is going to be to put it out, but it'll be done. And man, does it kick ass. Writing an Anthrax record. Other than that, there's really not. Oh, there's this. I mean, anything you ever want to know about me, you could just find me on Instagram, or, you know, I'm Scott Ian Thrax on Instagram, and all the current information is up there. We've got this Anthrax graphic novel that's going to come out. It's our 40th anniversary, 1981, 2021. July 18th is the actual date. We've got a whole bunch of plans because obviously we can't go out and tour and play a bunch of anniversary shows, but we've got a whole bunch of plans, like really cool stuff that's going to start probably around May, ramping up to that July 18th date, which will be all over. Obviously, we'll start announcing what it's going to be. So stay tuned for all that. This Anthrax comic book graphic novel thing that's coming out that I actually got to write a Judge Dredd story for. We got the rights for me to use the character, and which was amazing. We got Corey Taylor and Rob Zombie writing stories for it. I got Grant Morrison and Brian Azzarello, like two of the best comic writers in the world, are like just amazing people being a part of that. That comes out in a few months, and that's all I can think of at the top of my head right now.
Hell yeah. All right. Stay tuned. 40 years of Anthrax, dude. I can't that's fucking awesome. I can't believe it, man. You know, it's like, it's, you know, it's so cool. All right. We got the plugs in there. We done, y'all. Thank y'all so much for listening to A Couple In. I'm Cody Jinks. Our guest today was Living Legend, man. Scott Ian. Thank you, brother, man. And hugs and love to your family. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, man. Cheers, guys. Thank you.